is in 30 minutes. As I always say each week, my favorite 30 minutes of the week, I want to welcome everybody and acknowledge that you're here today. There's so much else to be doing this morning. It's a busy Erev Shabbos, so it's wonderful to be able to learn with everyone this morning. And before I get into any trouble, I want to give a big shout out to Esti Moskowitz, who is watching, who was very upset she did not get a shout out last week. So before I forget, I want to make sure she gets a shout out. Okay, here we go. We have three ideas in 30 minutes, of course. So much of this parsha is about the brachos that Yaakov is going to give to the 12 sons. So much to talk about. So much to talk about. Maybe we'll do like 9 ideas in 30 minutes. I'm not even sure how we're going to get this all in. But let's start with the brachas for Ephraim and Menashe. When Yosef really first brings in Ephraim and Menashe shortly before Yaakov's death, so when he first sees Yosef's sons, Yaakov asks something very surprising. He says, Mi'ele. He says, who are these children? Now, I've spoken about in the past before. To me, these are the most haunting words some of the most haunting words in the entire Torah. What essentially Yaakov is asking is this existential question, right? Mi'ele, who are these children? Who do they belong to? They grew up in Egypt. They were the first not to grow up under my watchful eye in the land of Israel. And so Yaakov Avinu looks at Yosef and he says, these children that you raised in exile, these children who you raised steeped in Egyptian culture, mi'ele, who do they belong to? Do they belong to us in our tradition? Or do they belong to the Egyptian culture? Rashi over there tells us something fascinating, though. Rashi says that Yaakov Avinu was about to have, or he had Ruach HaKodesh, and at the moment that he was about to give brachos to Ephraim and Menashe, he lost that Ruach HaKodesh. Bikesh Levarcham, V'nistalka Shechina Mimenu. At that moment in time, Yaakov Avinu lost Ruach HaKodesh. Why? How could Yaakov Avinu, one of our greatest leaders in all of history, one of the Avos, how could he have lost Ruach HaKodesh, says Rashi? L'fisha Asam Yeravam V'achav, Latzeis Min Ephraim, V'yehu Uvanav Mimenashe. Because there's going to come a time where the lineage of Ephraim and Menashe was not going to be so exciting. That Yeravam in Achav, we know Yeravam, of course, is going to split. He's going to divide the kingdom of Israel, which is ultimately going to lead into a descent of idolatry, ultimately culminating in the loss of the 10 tribes, really the beginning of the exile. Achav was one of the worst idolaters that we know of in our history. That all came from Ephraim, Rashi reminds us. V'yehu uvanav mimenashe. And Yehu, again, another great idolater in our history. He came from the tribe of Menashe. So here you have to picture the scene, right? Yosef is bringing in the grandchildren. He's bringing in Ephraim and Menashe. Yaakov is sitting on his bed and he gets up and he's about to give this prophetic vision and bracha. And Menistalka Menashechina. And the Shechina departs from him. Why? Because of the lineage that is Ephraim and Menashe. Because of who is going to descend from Ephraim and Menashe. I want to share with you an unbelievable, I promise you, unbelievable vort that I saw in the Shemin HaTov, quoting the Beis Yisrael, which is the fourth Ger Rebbe. The Beis Yisrael says that we have it all wrong. It's not that Yaakov was going to give the bracha, and because of Ephraim and Menashe's lineage, he loses Ruach HaKodesh. Says the Beis Yaakov, he loses Ruach HaKodesh, and that is what enables him to give the bracha. Let me say that again, then I'm going to read inside. He loses Ruach HaKodesh. He loses his ability to look into the future of what generations to come are going to look like. And because he loses that ability, all he sees is what's directly in front of him, two delicious children, and that's what enables him to give the bracha. Listen to the words of the Beis Yisrael, and I promise you, whether you give brachas to your children on Friday night, grandchildren Friday night, nieces, nephews, your neighbor, it doesn't matter. This is an amazing idea. Says the Beis Yisrael, Uferish Nifla of Beis Yisrael, the Shemin HaTov, quotes him. He says, Demar Shebirchem Lasov, Hainu Dafka, Al Yedesha Kavdu Eina Mizokan, Ministalke Mimenu HaNevuah. That what allowed Yaakov Avinu to give the bracha is Dafka, specifically, that his eyes were dimmed, right? We know that he'd become somewhat blinded at his old age, and that the Shechina had left him. V'ruach HaKodesh shelo ra'a od sheyatza yirava me'Ephraim v'yehu Menashe. He lost that ability to look into the future. So he forgot that Yeravam is going to come out of Ephraim and that Yehu is going to come out of Menashe. So it's dafka the fact that he lost the ability to see in the future, which enables him to give the brachos to Ephraim and Menashe now. Why? Says the Beis Yisrael, V'al yedesha kavdo einav dafka hayachol avarcham, that because his eyes were dimmed specifically, that's what enables him to give the bracha, basher husham, as the children are right now, mibli histaklus beatidos, without looking too much into the future, v'nimsa letovaso. And therefore, instead of focusing on what they would become and on who their descendants would be in the future, Yaakov Avinu was able to focus solely on their positive characteristics, on the positive attributes that sat in front of him at that moment in time. And so says the Beis Yisrael, I believe, a beautiful insight. Certainly one that I needed chizuk in as a parent. And I would imagine that anyone who has been a parent or a grandparent will appreciate this as well. That what allowed him to give a bracha to Ephraim and Menashe was specifically once he lost his ability to look far ahead into their future, and that's what allowed him to regain his ability to bless them. Right? That essentially what the Beis Yisrael is telling us is that sometimes we focus on what we're worried about the kids might become or what they could be. But sometimes if we allow ourselves to be blinded to that and we focus on what they are currently good at and their potential for greatness rather than the mistakes of what could be in the future, that's what enables us to bless them. And so says the Beis Yisrael something which I think is amazingly profound, that blessing others oftentimes requires us to have a certain level of blindness. That whether it comes to us, our children, our grandchildren, our friends, our neighbors, the person sitting next to me in shul, that if I study them too thoroughly, if I look too deeply into their lives and into their characters, of course I'm going to find flaws. Of course I'm going to find those yeravams and those yehus, the less than complimentary aspects of their personalities. And when that happens, when I am able to see all of the negativity, then I lose my ability to bless them. I lose my ability to see their positive qualities. And so says the Beis Yisrael, you want to know the key to bless other people and to see the blessings in other people and to see the positive attributes and the positive credentials and the future potential of every single person? It requires a certain level of blindness. It requires us not to dig too deeply, but to allow us simply to admire and appreciate the admirable qualities of each other without becoming too perturbed and disturbed by their shortcomings, without looking too deeply into, oh, this person does that and this person does this and this means that they're going to do this. No, says the Beis Yisrael, sometimes we all need a healthy dose of blindness, a healthy dose of ignoring all of that white noise around it and to simply to enjoy the person that we have in front of us. That's what allows us to see another person's positive attributes. That's what allows us to ignore the Yeravams and the Yehus and instead to see the blessings in each other, the blessings in each and every person. We say in Tehillim on Shabbos morning, we say, Mi Aisha Chafetz Chaim, who's the person who wants to love life? Right, Ohev Yamim Liros Tov, right, who loves life, Liros Tov, who sees the goodness. So most of us focus on the second pasuk, right? We say, Mi Aisha Chafetz Chaim. You know why, by the way? Because that's how the song is written. Mi Aisha Chafetz Chaim, right? Oh, and then we say, Nitzor, Nitzor, Lashon Chamera. So we think the one who gets life is the one who protects his mouth from speaking evil, from Lashon Hara. But no. It's that one pasuk which is the key. Mi Aisha Chafetz Chaim, who's the one who wants life? Liros Tov. We train ourselves to see the goodness. We allow ourselves to be blinded to the negativity. We allow ourselves to be blinded to the warts and the imperfections and the Yeravams and the Yehus that each one of us has. And instead, Liros Tov. If we train ourselves to only see the good, to become blinded to some of the negativity around us, that's what's going to allow us to see the blessings in each other. That is what's going to allow us to give the blessings to each other. I think that's a very powerful idea when it comes to each other, when it comes to relationships. And again, I think when you think about the fact that we give a bracha to our children every Friday night, Yasimcha Elokim Kefrayim V'chemnasha. Sometimes you need a little bit of blindness when you look at your children, right? I don't know about you. My children, of course, are perfect. But sometimes there's a blip on the map. And sometimes it's so easy to focus on that and to become so consumed by that. But it's important to have a little blindness every now and then, to look past some of the challenges that children are going through and to just notice the blessings within each one of them. Right, Esti Moskowitz? You're going to remind me of that tonight when I give you a bracha on Friday night. Okay, next idea comes from also the brachos, not the bracha of Ephraim Menashe, but rather the bracha that Yaakov gives to the brothers, the tribes. And we're going to start with Yehuda. Pasuk says, Gur Aryeh Yehuda. Of course, Yehuda is going to be Malchus. Yehuda is going to take on the mantle of leadership. And the Pasuk says, Kara Ravatz Ka'aryeh. He crouches down like a lion. Ukelavi mi yekumenu, and like the king of beasts, who dares to rouse him. Right? And then, of course, the next Pasuk, that the scepter will not depart from Yehuda, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet. Again, Yehuda's going to be the leader. According to the Pshat and the Pasuk, what the notion of Yehuda as an Aryeh, as a lion. So a lion, of course, we know, is the king of the jungle. Anyone who ever saw Lion King as a child knows that. So the lion is the king of the jungle. And Pshat is that what's going to allow Yehuda to achieve the success throughout his life is the security that he'll have, because he's going to be such a formidable military presence. So he's going to sustain a certain level of peace and tranquility that other tribes will not be able to sustain. That is the pshat in Kara Ravatz Ka'aryeh, that he crouches down like a lion. In other words, he preys on anyone who comes and tries to interrupt him or wage war against him. And that's what's going to allow Yehuda to thrive. Listen to this pshat of the Chidush Arim. Chidush Arim says, what is this imagery of Kara? Right, Kara Ravatz Ka'aryeh, he crouches down, which means like he's almost in like this fetal position, waiting to explode, right? Kilavi mi kumeni, he's like the king of beasts, but who can rouse him? Again, this imagery of being down, of being low, and who's going to awaken him? Says the Chidush Arim, what the lying down, and crouching symbolize is a certain spiritual descent. It's a spiritual collapse. We all know that if there's one characteristic which captures Yehuda, it was his ability to emerge from difficult situations that much stronger. It's his ability to do teshuva, his ability to compensate for his past mistakes and to emerge stronger, which defines Yehuda. And so whether it comes to the sin of Tamar, where Yehuda had the ability to pick himself up after his fall, right? Somehow always come back to Joey Newcomb, right? That even though you fall, you come back up. That is the definition of Yehuda. Or, as I spoke about in Shul last week, that Yehuda was really responsible for the sale of Yosef. That the Medrash tells us, the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us, that it was 4 against 4. Reuven wasn't there. So you had the 4 children of Bilhah and Zilpah on the one hand who wanted to save Yosef. You had the 4 children of Leah who wanted to kill Yosef. And Yehuda is the deciding vote. And Yehuda says, let's compromise. We won't let him live. We won't kill him. Rather, let's sell him. That pushes it over the top. That is what accounts for the sale of Yosef. Years later, Yehuda finds himself in the exact same situation. Right? Yosef offers Yehuda, at the end of Parshas Vayeshev, the deal of the century. Literally the deal of the century. When they've come to the inn and they find the goblets. So the brothers come to the guards and they say, I'll make you a deal. Whoever has the goblet, that one shall die, and the rest of us will be sold into slavery. Now they said that because they were so convinced none of them had it. Of course, who is it found in? It's found in the sack of Binyamin. So they bring Binyamin in before Yosef. And of course, the deal was that Binyamin dies and the other brothers get sold into slavery. Yosef says, I'll make you a deal. I'll make you a compromise. How about Binyamin is sold into slavery and the rest of you get to go free? Now that is a deal that any one of us would have taken without even blinking an eye, right? Death versus slavery, now slavery versus going free. any of us would have taken that deal. Vayigash elav Yehuda. Yehuda steps forward and says, no dice, right? Renegotiating. I'm not taking that deal. It's shocking. It's a deal of a century. Any of us would have taken it. Yehuda says, no. So explains the Meshech Chachma I shared last week. Because Yehuda says that there are times in life where you're not allowed to compromise. Yehuda recognized his mistake from the past of compromising and selling Yosef. And now when it comes to giving over Binyamin, Yehuda says, I'm going to do tshuva. I'm not compromising whatsoever. Yehuda is characterized, he's defined by his ability to do tshuva, by his ability to pick himself up from his mistakes, to learn from them, and to recover from them. And so the Pasuk says, the Chidush Arim is, Kara Ravatz Karye, the Yehuda crouches down like a lion. In other words, even when he is spiritually descended, he's spiritually down and out. Uklavimi Kumenu, but there's that imagery of him rising back up. Think about a lion. A lion might be down 1 second, but ultimately, the lion is always going to come back. The lion is always, always going to make a recovery. Of course, if Yehuda is the paradigm of leadership for the Jewish people, then it's a reminder to every single one of us that we can never fall into despair, into frustration, no matter what we've done, no matter what our past looks like. But we are Yehudim. We are Jews. And while we always give the vort that we're Yehudim because of Modeh, because of giving gratitude and thanks, this morning I want to suggest that we are called Yehudim because of our capacity to recover, because of our ability to make up for our mistakes and to emerge that much stronger, that even though we get knocked down sometimes, like Joey Newcomb says, we always get back up. That is the definition of what it means to be a Jew. So idea number one was the beautiful idea from the Beis Yisrael, the Ger Rebbe. I guess we've been in Ger for two ideas right now, but it's the idea from the Ger Rebbe of Ephraim Menashe, that why was Yaakov blinded at that moment in time? Because sometimes in order to see the blessings in each other, we have to ignore some of the facts around us. We have to become a little bit blind to the Yeravams and the Yehus. We have to lir os tov. We have to train ourselves to see the goodness in each other and to ignore the negativity. Idea number two was Yehuda, the bracha of Yehuda, which says that Yehuda is defined by his crouching down like a lion, that even though he might look dormant now, that even though he looks like he's been knocked down now, you and I both know you do not go near that lion, even if he's lying down, because in a second he can jump back up. That's what it means to be a Jew. To be a Jew means no matter how much we've been knocked down, we always come back that much stronger. Idea number three comes from the Mashkiach, Rav Yerucham in his Das Torah. Rav Yerucham makes a beautiful insight. Again, these are ideas that I think you and I have seen, or Rashi's that you and I have seen, but never really stopped to think about the implications of the Rashi. And with this, we stay in the brachos, right? We saw the bracha of Ephraim Menashe. We saw the bracha of Yehuda. And now let's see the bracha of Shimon and Levi. Shimon and Levi, of course, do something extraordinary, or extraordinarily inappropriately, depending on how you view it. Parshas Vayishlach, if you think about it, a month ago, my son's bar mitzvah, I remember this parsha very well, excuse me. So, of course, Dinah is abducted by Shechem. And it's really one of the most horrific stories in the entire Torah. Of course, Shimon and Levi step forward. They create this ruse to be able to save Dinah. And at the end of the story, you're not really sure who's right and who's wrong, because they massacre the entire city. And Yaakov is clearly unhappy. And Shimon and Levi are clearly on the opposite side when they say, Achzona Yasazos, right? Are you going to allow your daughter to be taken over for harlotry, right? Is that what you're going to allow and tolerate, Yaakov? And the story really leaves it as a cliffhanger. And as the reader of the story, you're kind of, do I empathize with Yaakov or do I empathize with Shimon and Levi? You're not really 100% sure what exactly which side you're on. So over here, we come to the brachos that Yaakov is going to give Shimon and Levi. And he says, Klei chamas machrusehem, right? Which is a nice way of saying that the interpreted that your lineage, in other words, what you've created, is this sense of unwarranted violence. right? That is your legacy. That was the word I was looking for. That is your legacy, is of Hamas. Now, we know the word Hamas, unfortunately, right? Hamas means violence. And so Yaakov is condemning Shimon and Levi for their clay Hamas, for their unwarranted violence. But listen to what Rashi says Rav Yerucham in his Das Torah. He says, Umanus zo shel rechitza. This legacy of murder, Hamas hu biyadehem, it is Hamas in your hands. Says Rashi, Hamas doesn't just mean violence, but it means stolen. Mi birchas Esav hizo. That was something that belonged to Esav, not to Yaakov. Umanus shalohi. That was his legacy. His legacy was supposed to be one of violence. Ve'atem chamastem osahimenu. You came along and you stole the attribute of Esav from him. Right? You stole. Hamas does not just mean violence, says Rashi, but klei chamas, you stole an attribute from Esav, and that is one of murder. Rashi essentially explains that what Shimon and Levi are guilty of is foreign import, right? That they took something, they took an attribute, they took a characteristic that was not theirs, and they brought it in from the outside. They extracted attributes and characteristics from the outside influences, and they incorporated it, and they brought it into their homes. They made it a part of the Jewish people. Listen to what Rav Yerucham says. Rav Yerucham says that is the ultimate condemnation that Yaakov Avinu is giving Shimon and Levi. And what he's telling them is that if you want to be the best version of yourself, then you cannot spend your entire life imitating another person. Right? Yaakov is condemning Shimon and Levi for having stolen a trait from someone else. And then instead of recognizing their own skills and their own attributes and their own potential and what naturally they were inclined for, their ultimate sin was that they were Hamas, was that they stole this from something other than themselves. They brought in foreign influences. Says Rav Yerucham, Yisbonein ha'adam mikochosav, that a person has to look at what they're good at, and what their attributes are, what our natural inclinations are. V'yire kama mehem lekuchim, v'chikuyim mizulaso. How many of them are not mine, but they're me trying to be someone else. They're me trying to mimic someone else's behavior. Ha'adam betivo mechakehu etzvivaso. Naturally, we are influenced by our surroundings. Vish maski liros yachol liros kiyesh v'chol rechush midosa me'acherim heim. You could wake up one morning and say that all of my behaviors and all of my attributes are me'acherim heim. They're not mine. I'm not being true to myself. I'm not maximizing my qualities and my skill set, but rather I am imitating, I'm copying, I'm stealing that from another person. Midos hachina alos, tovos betachlis, vehein lo shalohein. They can be great attributes. They can be great characteristics, but they're not yours. They're not why Hashem uniquely created you. It's because you're trying to be someone else, whether consciously or subconsciously. And so what Yaakov condemns Shimon and Levi for is not simply the murder and the massacre of the people of Shechem. What he condemns them for is from imitating another person, from stealing and encroaching upon what someone else was meant to do and what someone else was meant to be good at, but they make it their own. And so Rashi is reminding us that if we want to be the best version of ourselves, it starts by not trying to mimic other people. It starts by maximizing our own potential rather than by stealing those characteristics from someone else. Rav Yerucham goes on to say, Pam hodati im ish echad. He says, I once met a person. And while I'm talking to him, uvirosi kol tunosav, I'm seeing all of his mannerisms and I'm seeing the way he behaves. Niskarti al ish acher asher yeshlo. He says, I suddenly remembered another friend of ours. And so I asked him, I said, hey, do you know Johnny? Right? Do you know this guy, Johnny? He reminds me so much of you. And so this guy who Rav Yerucham is talking to says, yeah, of course I know Johnny. Johnny's one of my good friends also. Not only that, we spend so much time together. And Rav Yerucham realizes at that moment. He says, I realized. I realized how much of what this guy had was not because it's his own, but because he stole those mannerisms and stole those attributes from Johnny. Again, consciously or subconsciously. He says this entire entity, this guy's entire life, actually belonged to someone else. He had no legacy of his own. Kulo chamas v'gazela. Everything he had was stolen from another person. And so idea number three is to be true to yourself. We were not meant to be like each other. We were meant to be the best version of ourselves with the gifts that Hashem gave every single one of us, with the characteristics, with the attributes that Hashem gave every single one of us. To become the best version of ourselves, not to be guilty of theft, of stealing from other people, but to be true to who we are and the way that Hashem made us. And so we saw three ideas in just under 30 minutes this week. Idea number one, I don't remember the order that I went in, so if I'm out of order again, I apologize. Idea number one was a beautiful idea of the Beis Yisrael, of the bracha of Ephraim and Menashe. When Yaakov Avinu, the Pasuk tells us, became blinded, right, Nistalka Shechina Mimenu, that he lost that Ruach HaKodesh, we explain that he didn't lose Ruach HaKodesh because of something, but rather it's the fact that he lost Ruach HaKodesh that allowed him to give the bracha. That sometimes in order to see the good in other people, in order to see the blessings in each other, we have to allow ourselves to have a certain level of blindness. We can't always notice the warts and the imperfections of other people, but rather we have to liros tov. If you want to truly live, stop noticing the negativity, but allow yourself to be blinded to some of the imperfections of each other, and therefore to see the goodness of each other. That's what allowed Yaakov to give the bracha to Ephraim and Menashe. Idea number two came from the Chidushei Harim, where he says, why is Yehuda specifically compared to an Aryeh, that imagery of lying down? He says, because that is what it means to be a Jew. To be a Jew means that even when we got knocked down, we are able to lift ourselves up. We always emerge stronger and better. And so I encourage you, I implore you, no matter what you're going through in life, and no matter what your past looks like, and no matter what your history looks like, and no matter what mistakes you made, right? You are a Jew. You are a Yehudi. You are the ability to acknowledge those mistakes, to recover from them, and to emerge that much stronger. And idea number three comes from the bracha of Shimon and Levi, right? Where he says, Klei chamas michurotehem, where he says that your legacy is of violence. Rashi says, chamas doesn't mean violence. Rather, chamas means theft. The Yaakov Avinu is complaining, is lamenting that they stole their characteristics, they stole their attributes from another person, from Esav. We have to be true to ourselves. To become the best version of ourselves does not mean to become like another person. Doesn't mean to steal someone else's traits and attributes, but rather it means to take the potential, the skills, the attributes, the characteristics that Hashem gave every single one of us, and to not be jealous of the other person, but to maximize that, and to truly be zoche, to become the best version of themselves. With that, I want to wish everyone a beautiful Shabbos, a Shabbos filled with much simcha, and a Shabbos filled with an enormous amount of inspiration as well.